I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, here weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock, offering a safe space to the independent thinkers out there. Next hour, it's Wednesday, so we will do what we always do, which is Hump Day Health, natural health news you can use. How often do you feel really good? That was an interesting survey about that. That's what this show is about. So we'll talk about what the results of that, how many people out there are just not feeling their best. The numbers probably won't surprise many people. Also going to talk about salt. There's been so much bad nutritional advice given out over the years to avoid fats, the drugs that we're on. Salt is one of those things. Eggs went back and forth. Avocados go back and forth. There's all kinds of bad advice we've been given over the years, and you can tell that looking at Americans' waistlines and our overall health. Salt is another one of these targets that they have, so we're going to take a look at is salt good or bad? Who should be avoiding salt? Is it everybody? They basically say everybody should avoid and moderate your salt intake. We're going to take a look at that. And also, I've got some clips on basic ways to stay in shape and also nutritional yeast, which is an interesting supplement, easy to take, that we'll talk about as well. So we'll get to that stuff next hour. I got quotes of the day today. As a unique voice on Mississippi Talk Radio, I am the lone libertarian, maybe in the state, certainly in central Mississippi. I really fit in with no other shows, and I would imagine I have pretty dramatically different opinions on a whole host of topics than other people. So I love this quote from James Fenimore Cooper. Now, I don't profess any levels of greatness or anything better than mediocrity with this show, but according to James Fenimore Cooper, he says, "All greatness of character is dependent on individuality. The man who has no other existence than that which he partakes in common with all around him will never have any other than an existence of mediocrity. The greatness of character is dependent on individuality. The man who has no other existence than that which he partakes in common with all around him will never have any other than an existence of mediocrity." Yeah, I'm not a I'm not a go with the crowd guy. There's no doubt about that. So I'll take it. Bill Hicks, I ran across a Bill Hicks clip, and Bill Hicks is the guy that does the opening of my show, which is there's a puppet on the right, a puppet on the, I like the puppet on the right, I like the puppet on the left, one guy holding up both puppets. That's Bill Hicks, the comedian who passed away far too soon. Bill Hicks is another one, along with George Carlin, that I wish was around right now. Very astute social commentators. Bill Hicks said, "I do not believe making money in order to consume goods is mankind's sole purpose on this planet. If you're wondering what I believe our purpose on this planet is, I'll give you a hint. It has to do with creating and sharing." So that was the creative Bill Hicks. And I think he's got some Mississippi connections. I think I've had some listeners tell me he's got some Mississippi connections. But if you ever have a chance to go on YouTube or anywhere and look at old Bill Hicks material, it's some thinking stuff, too. He was not somebody who went around with the crowd either, so... it's Bill Hicks. And then Thomas Massie put out a tweet very succinctly. And I think it should explain things to people who might not understand. He said, "When the government taxes you, you pay now. When the government borrows, you pay later. When the government prints, you pay forever through inflation. When the government taxes, you pay now. When the government borrows, you pay later. When the government prints, you pay forever through inflation." And that's what you're seeing right now. A little bit of economic news. The market's having a tough day today after some up days. I don't know if you're familiar with bear market rallies, but they can be quite impressive. So we may see some big pops in the stock market in what I think overall is going to be a tumultuous time for markets. They're having a tough day today. But recently we had some, air quotes here in the studio, great unemployment numbers come out. Joe Biden took to the microphone to talk about the record job creation that his administration has done. This is very similar to what Donald Trump did post-COVID, which was slam everybody out of their jobs, and when they are allowed to return to their jobs, take credit for actually creating those jobs. It's bizarro world, insane, but we are so economically illiterate in this country and not paying attention, we don't really call them out for these things generally. But this was interesting. In that jobs report that's just come out, this article was written, I think this was on Wolf Street. The jobs report this morning seemed like good news, 3.6% unemployment, until you look at the details. Quote, the U.S. labor force shrank by 363,000 people in April from a month earlier, Labor Department said. This was on Friday. The labor force participation rate, or the share of American adults working or looking for a job, ticked down to 62.2% in April from 62.4% in March. So we actually had, and this is one of the great tricks of what our unemployment rate is that the more people who decide they've just given up looking for work, they drop out of the unemployed figure. And so unemployment, actually, the more people you have drop out of the labor force, the more people, or the more the unemployment rate actually goes down. So I didn't hear Biden say anything about that. Of course not. Nobody does. More about that in just a second. This was kind of a funny tweet out from a guy named Michael Guyed. He's a chartered financial analyst. He said over the past year, lentils are up over 100%, excuse me, over 107%, while Bitcoin is down over 35%. Looks like lentils are a store of value. I'm going to have to share that with my cryptocurrency people. That'll drive them crazy. Lentils are a better investment than Bitcoin and the crypto space has been over the past year. There's a libertarian candidate surging in Argentina. I thought this was just kind of an interesting story. Argentina is going through a financial crisis right now, as they do about every, I don't know what the time frame is, about every 15 years, Argentina has a financial crisis. I don't know what the hell they're doing down there. It has been at times, you know, one of the most luxurious, most prosperous areas in South or Central America. But they continue to have crises there. I'm sure it's rampant corruption down there. Every government's corrupt. But this was a story on Yahoo News. In Argentine, libertarian channels enter Trump to blow up political status quo. Javier Milei, an ebullient Argentine economist with wild hair and avid fan base, was once known for his theatrical and acerbic televised takedowns of the country's political elite. Now he has a shot at taking them down at the ballot box. An admirer of former U.S. President Donald Trump, who was elected to the lower house last year, has surged in opinion polls ahead of Argentina's 2023 presidential elections with attacks on the political mainstream and pledges for total economic freedom. This libertarian in Argentina said, in terms of political logic, I am a mistake because what I have come to do is, in fact, stamp out the privileges of politicians. His abrupt rise has been underpinned by years of economic chaos that have left the once affluent South American country with inflation near 60%. 4 in 10 people in poverty, a feeble peso currency, capital controls, and recurrent debt crises. And this is interesting to me because we have such a hapless libertarian party in this country. You would really think, particularly in 2020. Now, I know a lot of Trump supporters listen to this show or listen to this station. They may have left me long ago. You're not going to be happy with me next segment either. But you would really think that somebody that is all about blowing the system up, about crushing the political class by removing all the power away from them, would just be a slam dunk in what we see here in the United States and obviously in Argentina, too. So they may lead the charge and elect somebody that is actually looking to shrink the government and take power out of the hands of politicians. This seems like such a no-brainer to me. Nobody likes politicians. They may like parties to some degree, but most everybody at this point, outside of the people who are benefiting from this system, which is really a very small sliver of our population, but the average Jane and Joe out there can't stand our political class. They know they are corrupt. They know we are in the wrong direction. And you would think somebody that is just destined to come and strip them of their power would just be an assured candidate that people could get behind. And for some reason here in the United States during the 2020 election, our Libertarian Party here started throwing in with tweets about being anti-racist. A lot of social justice warriors at the top of the Libertarian Party. No Libertarians I know think the way that the Libertarian Party has. As I've said many times, they're at the cusp of fixing that at their convention right now. But it just seems like these times, holy cow, if libertarians cannot succeed in these times by explaining to you exactly what's going on and capitalizing on the disaffection that everybody has with our political class in the direction of the country, if not now, when? This seems like the moment for libertarians to make their case. We just didn't have such a lame party here. When I come back, I did want to talk about Donald Trump has done an interview. And some of it I really kind of agreed with, and some of it left me kind of shaking my head. I'll talk about both sides of it. It looks like he is gearing up for a 2024 run. I think he went out to a rally recently, and he went out to the music of Hold On, I'm Coming, one of the old, I think it's a Motown hit. This obviously fueled a bunch of speculation and his classic Trump showmanship. So it looks like he's gearing up for a 2024. So I'll tell you where I agree and where I disagree with what he said in his most recent interview when I come back. Stick around. If you are an economics nerd like I am, and there's very few of us out there, there's a great website called Wolf Street. Wolf Richter is the guy who runs this website, and it's just very interesting because the numbers that we get out of our government are just such incredible lies. Matter of fact, yeah, Wolf Street is where I got that statistic on the labor force participation rate. I can tell people tuning out just when I say that, labor force participation rate. But it is a good site. The government lies to us about all kinds of statistics and trends, claims credit, deflects blame. He's very good at explaining exactly where our economy is in all kinds of different sectors. I was looking through that earlier, and I have been wondering about and I've brought it up many times, the price of a barrel of oil now versus where it has been before when prices have spiked. And a barrel of oil is trading. It's in a bit of a range somewhere between around $96 and $110 a barrel. It spiked up to around $135 for a few days. That's when we saw our first big surge in gasoline prices. But it came back down about 30%, down to around $100 a barrel. And I've been wondering why it is that gasoline has not retraced that 30% as well. I mean, if you look at a $4 a gallon gasoline, you know, 30% of that is $1.20, puts gasoline back down at $2.80, but it didn't move back that way. It got down to, you know, it moved down maybe about 2%, 3%. And so I've been wondering, and Wolf Richter has got a piece in there about oil prices, and basically the idea is that it's just been given as granted as inflation, that they are charging more for gasoline now because they can. It doesn't have anything to do. It's kind of untethered from the price of a barrel of oil. When I first clicked on this story, I thought, well, maybe refining costs have gone up so much that it's more expensive to refine crude oil now. But there wasn't any explanation of that. It was just essentially customers will pay it. And so far, people are still driving like they have. There hasn't been demand destruction. There's still a lot of freight shipping. People are still buying things. So trucks still have to buy this really expensive diesel, and they seem to be buying it. It was just kind of a weird thing. It's basically the gas companies have just said, hell, looks like they'll keep paying this. Doesn't matter what so they are making record profits. It's just what they refer to as an inflationary mindset. That's a hell of a thing, isn't it? Where we've all just, we're grumbling about it, but we haven't altered our behavior yet around inflation. Now, this won't last long. Eventually, we've seen consumer credit just going, setting new records every single month, meaning people are putting more and more on their credit cards. There are finite levels to that, so eventually people will alter their behavior. But right now we just have a, quote, inflationary mindset, so we're willing to pay more for gasoline. So just know when you go to the pumps, a lot of that is just the fact that we buy it. And I know most of us don't have a choice. I don't either. I grumble about it. There's really not a whole lot we can do about it, but that's a hell of a thing. So Donald Trump has done an interview with the California Globe. And I thought it was interesting. It's a two-part interview, the way it was presented. And so I'll start with where I agree and really understand Trump's frustration, and then I'll make a point. The first part of it is largely about election integrity. And Trump says he thinks California could even be, at very most, a purple state, possibly a red state, but they have such election fraud out in California. That may or may not be true. We've seen so many people moving out of California recently. That's probably a lot of what were red voters in that blue state. So you really wonder, with as crooked as elections can be, if California has just been artificially blue this entire time. But he makes a lot of points about election integrity. He talks about the fact that, look, France votes on a single day without a bunch of mail-in ballots. Canada votes on a single day without a bunch of election ballots. Now, I don't know if they have any absentee ballots in any of these places. But the bottom line is our elections over the past few cycles have just morphed into this uncontrolled, unaccountable system. They really have made a mess. And I can imagine the frustration of Donald Trump just watching this and realizing nobody's really doing anything about it. And he feels he was robbed in 2020. I'm certainly open to that as well. And so I have a great deal of sympathy. It must be very bizarre to think you have had an election stolen from you and basically see nothing going on, knowing that in 2022, 2024, nobody seems to be acting on this. Maybe a couple of states or a couple of districts taking some action. But overall, our elections are as big a mess as they've ever been. And we can expect 2022, the elections, the midterms this year, to have all kinds of weirdness about them as well. So a lot of sympathy for him there. The one thing is, I have not seen 2,000 mules. I'll be perfectly honest, I wasn't going to pay $30 to tell me something that I kind of already know. I'm a big consumer of documentaries, but not at $30 a pop. Dinesh D'Souza is kind of on my good list and my bad list from time to time. He does some great work, but I didn't feel the need to send him $30 to figure out what I already believe. But here's the interesting observation that I've heard on 2,000 mules from many people, is that within 2,000 mules, Dinesh D'Souza says there are many groups that are involved in this ballot harvesting, in all of this fraud. And he makes reference to several groups. The problem is he never actually names the groups. And you would really think that this might be the time to name and shame all these organizations that are involved in the election meddling. The suspicion is, from just about everybody I've heard comment on this, that the reason that Dinesh D'Souza did not name the names of these groups that are carrying out these bogus election operations is that some of them are tied to the Republican Party. And you have to wonder, this is much to me like Democrats and charges of, you know, kind of bizarre sexual things, pedophilia or sexual harassment or sexual assault or just perversions. And on the right, everybody sees this. They look at Jeffrey Epstein and the fact that Bill Clinton traveled with him. And we look at some of these things and we think, oh, those Democrats are just a bunch of perverts. They got all kinds of things going on. And I constantly point out there are other documentaries made about the Bush years, Conspiracy of Silence being one of them. that you should see. You can find that on YouTube. It was an uncompleted documentary that was killed at the last minute on A&E or Discovery Channel or something like that, and it was not allowed to air, but the raw footage of it is available online, and you can go see. And there were Republican charges of this. My point being that this is both parties. And if Trump has frustration that they won't fix the election system, it's because Republicans have been using it to cheat all this time, too. It's mutual assured destruction in Washington, D.C. They both are criminal gangs, and they don't expose each other because they know they're both vulnerable. If one party goes after the other to expose their fraud and their dishonesty, then the other party's got the goods on them as well, and that's why we maintain the status quo. And I would imagine that Dinesh D'Souza also knows that Republicans have used these tactics before as well. Maybe not to the scale that was used in 2020. I don't know, but there sure are a lot of very unpopular incumbents that continue to get reelected time and time again in both of these parties. So I think the suspicion is probably well-founded that the reason Dinesh D'Souza does not name these organizations is because you would find some conservative groups in there monkeying around in the ballots, too. So there we go. We'll start with that. My sympathies with Donald Trump. I get him on election integrity. He makes some good points. Again, this is a California Globe article. You can check it out. It's a two-part interview. And he makes some very good points on elections. And his frustration is certainly understandable, as other countries have got better elections than the United States. This so-called, air quotes in the studio, bastion of democracy. But when I come back, part two of his interview, he made some statements that really had me shaking my head. I'll get to those when I come back. Stick around. What's the frequency, can it this year been so dream? All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me today. Before I get into the second part of this Trump interview, I wanted to talk about the Disinformation of the Day segment. I don't know if you saw this yesterday. The New York Times got blasted for this. The New York Times sent out a tweet that said this: breaking news. Ukraine ended its, quote, combat mission, unquote, in Mariupol, and said fighters were being evacuated, signaling that the battle at a steel plant was over. So this is a sub-headline on this tweet says, Ukraine live update, setbacks in East force Russia to scale back ambitions. What they describe as Ukraine ending its combat mission and fighters being evacuated, the truth of the matter was, they were captured. They surrendered to the Russians that won that battle. They didn't end their combat mission. The Russians ended that combat mission, and they weren't evacuated. They were captured. The wounded were taken to a Russian-controlled hospital, and the others that could be taken that didn't need medical attention were taken into Russian-controlled territory by Russian forces. This is just absolutely incredible disinformation, and is the reason that I tell you that it is hard to know when I report on what Russians are saying about what's going on in Russia. We're not sure if that's true, but you know damn good and well here in the United States, the news that you're hearing about Ukraine are lies. You know, the war may be going worse for Russia than we know right now. It's very, very hard to understand exactly what's taking place because it's just two warring sides of disinformation. But holy cow, I mean, the New York Times is completely misleading with that story. They make it sound like they did what they set out to do, and now they're withdrawing and going somewhere else. No, they're not. They were captured. They surrendered. And I got to tell you, it's not a good thing to be a Nazi. Can we all agree on that? I don't know if we can even agree on that anymore, because the United States has now sent around $54 billion to Nazis. It's not good to be a Nazi in the first place, probably bad for your karma. Obviously, it's a mental disease to have that kind of hatred in your heart. It's not good to be a Nazi, but the only thing worse than being a Nazi is probably being a Nazi in Russian custody. Russians have a long history of losing millions, tens of millions of their citizens to the Nazis. and these Nazis have been attacking ethnic Russians for the past 8 years, murdering 14,000 of them. I can't imagine these Nazis, this Azov brigade that was captured in the steel plant, I can't imagine they're enjoying a spa day today. I would not want to be a Nazi, but I sure as hell would not want to be a Nazi in Russian custody. We'll see what happens there. All right, so this California Globe piece on Donald Trump, have I started this out comfortably enough for everybody? I get him on election integrity. Got to be so frustrating to be him, no doubt about it. He made some great points about the fact that other countries, France and Canada, other Western countries, have got elections that are more on the up and up than ours. The second part of the interview, however, had to do with economics. And one of the things that Trump was asked about was, or probably brought up himself, however it came about, was, you know, the state of the economy as it is right now. He was talking about Joe Biden. He said he could be a combination of Herbert Hoover and Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter was almost Herbert Hoover. Carter, obviously known for the stagflation of the late 1970s. Within this California Globe piece, they give a lot of figures about what took place during the Carter presidency. Inflation rose from 7% in 77 by an average of more than 11% in 79 up to nearly 14% in 1980. Automobile prices increased 72%. Net new house prices went up 67%. In 1979 alone, gasoline prices increased 60%. By the time Carter left office, the prime rate was 21.5%. Gas prices have skyrocketed to an inflation-adjusted price of today's dollars, $4.14, which made it the fifth most expensive year in 85-year span. So they point out the record of Jimmy Carter. Now, they leave out a lot of background of that, knowing that Carter was really Carter made things worse. And of course he did, because he headed up an organization, our federal government, that everything they touch turns to crap. Carter put in some price controls and things that accounted for more shortages than were necessary during this inflationary period. So Carter made things worse, but Carter was really more a victim of bad timing than anything else. And I hate to tell you this, but Joe Biden is exactly the same. Joe Biden is making things worse actively because he not only does he head an organization that constantly makes things worse, which is our federal government, but he's also an idiot. And he's controlled by either other idiots or people who are purposefully doing this to the country. But Jimmy Carter came into office about 6 years after they took us, after the Republican president, Richard Nixon, took us off the gold standard, which meant the money printing could really crank up in earnest. This was going to create inflation. Jimmy Carter just happened to occupy those years when that money printing came home to roost after we took our dollar off of the gold standard, which put some constraints on spending and printing up of money. So Donald Trump goes into this and makes criticisms of Joe Biden, but he says this, and I can't let it go. Quote, whereas we had the strongest economy in the history of the world, President Trump said, quote, we created the strongest economy in history. There was never an economy like this. The reporter is obviously a pretty conservative. I guess California Globe is the right-wing newspaper. I'm sure that's a rare thing out in California. But underneath that, it says, under President Donald Trump, the 45th president, the U.S. enjoyed the best labor market since 1969 with record low unemployment, more jobs, rising wages, low gas prices, record high employment for ethnicities, corporate taxes cut, consistently higher GDP, booming stock market, increase in manufacturing jobs, and no war. Now, I could take exception to a whole lot of those things in that because they're couched. Low unemployment rate, I've already explained earlier in this. We had the labor force participation rate when Donald Trump was in only got back. He did improve it. During the Trump administration, labor force participation did improve. It got back to essentially the levels that it was at 2014. Between 1973, I did the research. I know this is maybe too facty for people. But 1973 to 2014, the labor force participation rate was better than Trump's best year in office. How do you have the greatest economy in the history of the world when there was a period of, what would that be, 40 years in U.S. recent U.S. history from 1973 to 2013 that had better labor force participation rate, meaning more working-aged Americans were actually employed as a percentage of the population. Now, one of the things that all politicians love to say is more people are working now than ever before. Well, of course that's the case, because we constantly have population growth in this country. Obviously, the number of people working is almost always, except for in true recessionary times, is always increasing. Obama had more people working than Bush many years because we had a higher population, and Bush had more people working than Clinton because we had more population, and you see where I'm going with this. So we had 40 years of better labor force participation rate, but we use the metric of the unemployment rate, which means that people who just gave up looking for work are not included, and Trump did have low unemployment rates. Do you believe the current 3.6% unemployment rate here in the United States signals a strong economy right now? Well, the same games are played with that statistic that were played during the Trump years. But the other thing is that Trump got a 3% GDP one year. Never, no GDP year in any of Trump's 4 years got higher than 3%. There are many, 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 many years in U.S. history where we had GDP that was north of 4%, 5%, 6%, and I think even a couple where there was 7% GDP growth. How is it possible that our economy was the greatest in the history of the world when we couldn't match the labor force participation rate of any year between 1973 and 2013, and we didn't have a GDP that was even half of some of our best years during the Trump years? How does he get away with saying that this was the greatest economy in the history of the world? Which always begs the question with me. I'm always trying to kind of analyze and try to figure out who we're dealing with. I voted for him in 2016. Very disappointed. Didn't vote for him in 2020. But I'm just not sure if Trump is more of a liar or an idiot. Does he not know? Does he not know that 12 years of artificially low inflation interest rates and money printing creates inflation? He talks in this interview about the problems with inflation now, comparing them to the Jimmy Carter years. Does he seriously not know that increasing the money supply by 20% in his last year of office would create inflation? Does he not know that 12 years of artificially low interest rates creates bubbles in things and will eventually create inflation? Does he really not know that? Because that's very concerning, I got to say. Can he be that stupid? I don't really think he is, but he may be drinking his own Kool-Aid. I'm not sure. Inflation does not happen overnight. They don't print up money, put it into the bond market, and suddenly prices spike across all consumer goods. Now, if they had taken all of the money that they've printed up and just printed up $250,000 and gave it to every taxpayer, that would immediately create inflation. But that's not what they did. I believe the number of all the money printing of the past few years, they've added $250,000 per taxpayer in debt, but we didn't get that. We got checks for $1,400, $600, $1,200, or y'all got checks for those. I didn't get them. But it doesn't happen overnight. So this is either economic illiteracy coming from Donald Trump, or he's actually just lying about these things. And the problem is that he is a narcissist trying to fluff his own record because he knows his supporters cannot figure this out and refuse to do it. And I look at this because I hear this repeated constantly within the Trump crowd that he created the greatest economy we've ever seen. In the face of all these other facts, it reminds me a great deal of people who are still wearing masks right now. It does not matter. It does not matter any of the data around masks. It does not matter any of the facts around masks. It doesn't matter how many people come out and tell you and explain to you why masks don't work. Viral particles are too small to be addressed with a cloth mask or anything short of an N95, and even that needs to be changed every 2 hours. You can tell somebody that to their face, and they just refuse to accept those facts, and they just want to put the mask on because it makes them feel good. And this is exactly what we see with the phenomenon of Trump coming out and saying he's got the greatest economy and his supporters crowing about it relentlessly. It is bizarro world. It has gotten to the point with me particularly with this inflation, because, as I've said, if Donald Trump was president right now, you'd be battling inflation. This was bound to happen. Joe Biden will make it worse. And Donald Trump might have done things to make it a little bit better, particularly when it comes to price of gasoline. But now that we've found out that it's not even the barrel of oil price that's affecting gasoline prices, it's just a, quote, inflation mindset that's creating the prices that we're paying at the pump, maybe he wouldn't have had that much effect on it. But I would imagine there are ways that Trump might have approached this differently and made some level of improvement. But inflation was coming anyway. I really can't figure out if Donald Trump understands. Donald Trump says we had the greatest economy in the history of the world. Yet for some reason, in 2018, he freaked out when interest rates went above 2%. There have been times in this country when interest rates were over 5 or 6%, and we still got 5, 6, 7% growth in this country. We could not handle 2.5% interest rates before he started screaming at the Federal Reserve to turn those printers back on, reverse, do low interest rates to negative interest rates. That's not the sign of a strong economy, and sure as hell not the sign of the strongest economy in the history of the world. If you can't handle 2% interest rates, you have a fragile Fabergé egg of an economy. And all of this is not even to mention the fact we couldn't cross 3% of GDP. We didn't have a labor force participation rate better, even in the best year of the Trump administration, that was better than the 40 years between 1973 and 2013. And with all of those records we failed to beat, a GDP that wouldn't go north of 3%, and that was in face of creating record amounts of debt and putting it into the economy. This was a show economy, a facade economy. It was not a strong economy. Maybe I harped on this too much for my desires for popularity here, but it is mystifying to me. As I say, it has become like trying to convince somebody who loves the face binky, the mask, that they don't work, that there is no evidence that there is any efficacy of wearing a mask, is exactly the same look I get on a Trump supporter's face when I try to explain them the reality of the Trump economy. Total blank stare. Total lack of acceptance of reality. I'll be right back. How hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. You're the renegades, it is the time of age. All right, final segment of this hour, and then we'll get into Hump Day Health, natural health news you can use. If you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, this is the place to be. 10 to 11 o'clock every Wednesday, so we'll do that next hour. Got an email. I can be reached by email at mikemadison@wyab.com. I love questions because the stuff that I talk about is different. A lot of people have not been exposed to the ideas that I talk about. I'm happy to answer any questions. Admittedly, I'm bad at getting back to emails very quickly most of the time, and I promise you it is scheduling. I do a lot of things. I spend a lot of time preparing for shows here. I also do a lot of other things outside of radio station business that tie up a lot of hours. I should calculate up how many hours I spend in various ventures. So it takes a little time for me to get back to them. But I like questions to my email because it actually provides me some show topics. It is difficult sometimes when you know, as a libertarian, you kind of know what you know, but you don't know that other people don't know what you know or what you think. And so I'm happy to answer any questions when I point out things. And so I will get back to this emailer by email and probably use it as a show topic. But, you know, one thing I wanted to comment on real quick, I am a podcast listener generally when I fall asleep. It's a bad habit in my grand scheme of trying to do things positive for my health. Always having something playing while I fall asleep is probably not good. But I find I've got such a bad monkey mind at night that if I lay in silence, my mind just gets going 100 miles an hour. I've got to have something to kind of focus on to help me drift off to sleep. I listen to, there's a podcast called American Scandal out there, and recently I've been listening to the Watergate segment of it. It goes through or American Scandal, the podcast, is about all kinds of different scandals. Enron, Battle at Wounded Knee. I mean, all kinds of things. They're usually 4 or 5, 6-part things. Very interesting thing. But what struck me is I've been listening to the Watergate episodes of that. I think it's a 4-part series, about 45 minutes per. And it just really struck me last night when I was listening to it. You know, this is the Watergate scandal is the scandal of all scandals, right? We've taken the gate from Watergate, and now anytime there's a political scandal, we throw a gate on there. Like, this is kind of the benchmark for political corruption. But what struck me when I was listening to it, this is about, you know, the GOP breaking into the DNC offices and doing, you know, snooping around a little bit. And it just struck me that the political corruption of today just dwarfs. I mean, Watergate was nothing compared to what's going on right now. Elections, perversions, just theft of money, $40 billion going to Ukraine. We had the CIA dealing drugs into inner city communities in the 1980s. Nobody got in trouble. Watergate is such a quaint little scandal. It's almost funny. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and it's Wednesday. Every Wednesday, we take a break from politics and current events, as much as they bleed into this segment from time to time, and talk about health. This is a segment for people who are sick and tired of being sick and tired, or people who are just constantly looking for tips and tricks to kind of biohack, to make yourself feel better, to perform better. And most of all, it's supposed to be a show to tell you that if a jackass like me can figure out some health stuff using the World Wide Web and some trusted experts, then you can too. You can reclaim your health. You can escape the medical system. I start off every show by explaining, however, I am not a doctor, not a scientist, not a biologist, not an immunologist, virologist, surgeon, primary care doc, nurse, therapist. I'm nothing. I have no medical training, no certification to advise you on your health. I am just trying to lay out some breadcrumbs to empower you to take your health into your own hands. There was a meme put out, or a quote by Gina Carano. I ran across this on Twitter as I follow some natural health things there as well. And she wrote, "Human beings are not biologically dependent on pharmaceutical products for survival. Pharmaceutical companies are financially dependent on human beings for survival. We are not suffering, as you would probably think, watching any mainstream television or visiting your doctor's office. You would think that maybe we are all suffering from some kind of lack of enough pharmaceuticals in our system. That's the problem. Most certainly is not the case." Got a lot to get to today, but I wanted to start out with this because this was a clickbait for me. The headline of this story: aches, anxiety, exhaustion, oh my. Adults feel good just 47% of the time, poll reveals. Feeling good is becoming an increasingly rare commodity these days, according to a new survey. In the poll of 2,000 people in the United Kingdom, it turns out adults truly feel good, both mentally and physically, less than half of the time, around 47%. 1 in 4 respondents say they deal with anxiety at least once per week, and 40% battle muscle aches on most days. On an especially depressing note, just under 6 in 10, 57%, say they rarely feel, quote, on top of their game physically. Another 61% have simply accepted that aches and pains are part of their daily life. The poll, put together by MyVibe, also asked respondents why they think they're in such bad shape. The top answers included not exercising enough, a poor diet, and not having enough hours in the day. Now, this quote here, quote, "It's hard to be 100% at all times, and there will be things that bring us down. Especially as we get older, aches and strains and sniffles seem to seek us out more easily when we were younger. However, that may all be a case of looking at the past through rose-tinted glasses, as many youngsters report similar issues. There are so many different ways we need to look after ourselves, both mentally and physically, that it can be a full-time job just staying on top of it." My experience has been I am healthier, I feel better on a daily basis than I did 20 years ago. There's absolutely no doubt about it whatsoever. There are things associated with aging I am like anybody else. I can have a big stretch or yawn in the morning and potentially pull a muscle or tweak a nerve. These things are aggravating as we get older. But on a day-to-day basis, I get along better now than I did 20 years ago. And if you listen to this show, if you take action, that's the more difficult part. Passively listening to anybody talk about anything is pretty easy. You can be armed with a certain level of knowledge, but if you do not take the action that is required to act on that knowledge, it really does you no good. But you will increase the number of days that you look or feel great. I had, previous to my pretty serious alteration of my diet, getting a bunch of sodas and bag chips and crap like that out of my diet, all prepared foods that came out of a bag or box at night. Prior to that, it was very difficult for me. I probably would have been one of the respondents to say, I feel really good about 3 days a month. About 10% of the time, I might have felt good. I had such bad stomach problems. I had such bad chronic headaches. And then I had horrible insomnia, which will ruin your entire life. I don't know if anybody out there has ever suffered from true insomnia, where you may get an hour to 2 hours of sleep per night for an extended period of time. I went through one period. It was about 6 months long, where if I got 3 hours of sleep in a night, I was lucky. It was horrific. It ruined everything in my life. When I changed my nutrition, started paying attention to it, every bit of that has gone away, and I got my life back. And even if you don't find anything in this show that helps your personal situation, if you just begin to take an interest in your health and then start taking actions and look for strategies, you will feel better too. You'll be shocked at how aging is not the big deal that you think it is when it comes to physically or mentally. We talk about both on this show. Of course, the outside world is conspiring against you to feel better. You have to possess a certain amount of strength and commitment to do it. They'll throw convenient but horrible foods at you constantly. You'll have so many distractions, and your schedule will get so full. You'll place such importance on stupid little things and ignore one of the biggest things that is really what you should be focusing on, which is your own health and the health of your family, that it conspires against you. And then there's this. Just to show you how far afield our culture has gone from wanting people to attain good health, and I tell you right now, with no reservations whatsoever, our healthcare system here is a for-profit model. Pun intended on the model part. When I bring this up, Sports Illustrated is coming out with its new swimsuit edition for 2022. My understanding is they may be putting out several different covers. Sports Illustrated has been known for decades now. A lot of pinups and boys' high school lockers of Sports Illustrated models on the front of this thing. I ran across this one of someone named Yumi Nu. She is one of the proposed and possibly one of the few, I think there may be four different covers. Either they're choosing between them or they're going to roll out all four of these covers for the Sports Illustrated thing. But they've got a morbidly obese woman that will be on the cover of Sports Illustrated's swimsuit edition. Normalizing obesity for this country is a disaster. It's like normalizing drug addiction. Being dramatically overweight does not make anybody a bad person in any way, shape, or form. It has absolutely nothing to do with their character, with their kindness, with their quality of who they are as a human being. But there is no escaping that this makes you a much less healthy person, and dramatically increases the likelihood of disease and suffering in that person. Making people feel comfortable with obesity is like making a drug addict that's destroying their lives feel like being an addict's okay. Now, people might get mad at me for this. This is not about fat shaming, but this is about letting people know that, you know, we have just lived through 2 years where being obese has been a death sentence to thousands and thousands of people. Just the obesity and the underlying health problems that it causes caused a lot of people to be far more susceptible to COVID-19 and really any other disease, but COVID in the past 2 years, it flat out killed people. Now, obesity will kill you slowly over years. It will reduce your lifespan, and during the life that you do have, you'll suffer a whole lot of health problems. You will be in that group of people that does not consistently feel good. There's just no way around it. But in the last 2 years, we have watched obesity literally kill people within days and weeks during COVID. And I don't know how this is really taken. It is certainly not a shaming thing. I've been overweight. Got friends that I love that have been overweight and have lost weight. But the goal should be you can accept yourself exactly how you are. You really have no choice. That's kind of a Buddhist philosophy. You accept everything. You can't rail against what is. But if there is not an aspiration, if there is a new setting of the bar to say, well, if you're morbidly obese, just be okay with that. Don't be struggling to lose that weight. Don't shame yourself. No, this is about reclaiming your health. We have a problem in this country. And Sports Illustrated, I believe, is making that worse. Now, there's a lot of people out there who may think that the models who've been on Sports Illustrated or Victoria's Secret or any of these supermodels that we've had over the decades are damaging to women who are not naturally built to look like that. I can see that. I can understand that that's a problem. But almost everybody can be fit and at least in a healthy weight range, and that should be the standard. That should be what's encouraged. We made smoking sexy for decades. How'd that work out for us? Many adults are still addicted to smoking and has a range of health consequences. We all know that now. Smoking doesn't make you a bad person at all. We'll shame a smoker. Now, there's no doubt about that. We'll shame a smoker because they're addicted to nicotine. We won't shame an eater for being addicted to horrific foods. But should we glamorize smoking and encourage smokers just to accept that habit? Should we celebrate smoking? You go out and do you, smoker. Or should we just love the smoker but continue to encourage them to stop smoking? I've been a smoker. A lot of friends, really. You know, encouraged me, ragged me, all kinds of things. It's a terribly unhealthy habit. You know, we at least came to our senses when it came to smoking and stopped really glamorizing it, and doctors stopped recommending one brand over another. And this has taken us so far afield. It's almost like social promotion through schools. Instead of aspiring to be better, we've just decided, just do whatever. You just do you in school. We'll just move you on to the next grade. And what we put out are kids who are unproductive, unable to attain anything in life because they've been given no structure, no education, no expectations. And this is going to health as well. I just think this is an absolutely terrible trend, not to mention probably a brand wrecker for Sports Illustrated. And to back this up a little bit, there is a new site I visit now called Gut Health News. I'm an economics nerd. I'm a health nerd. They ran a story. Obesity can rewire the immune system, causing some drugs to make other conditions worse. Atopic dermatitis, also called eczema, is a common type of skin inflammation, your body's immune system responding to an allergy. The itching can be so severe it adversely affects mental health. Usually, the thickened, reddened skin improves quickly when treated with drugs that suppress the immune system. Now, I would suggest, and you can find, and I've done them on this show, natural treatments for eczema and these kinds of things. I don't know that using a drug to suppress your immune system is just the best idea we can come up with, because obviously when you suppress your immune system, you leave yourself open to a whole host of other diseases that will come. Watch the commercials on television. There's a whole bunch of them out there. They'll say, you know, may make you more likely to get an infection of other kinds. It's just really sad. Of course, you get the other infection, and then what do you need for that infection? Another pharmaceutical to treat that infection. Anyway, a new study, however, reveals that the same immunosuppressive drugs, when used in obesity, can make eczema worse. Researchers at Gladstone Institute, the Salk Institute for Biological Studies, and UC San Francisco collaborated to study the phenomenon. They tested the process in mice, which have immune systems similar to humans. The usual drugs for eczema, which target the immune system, were rendered useless or even harmful when administered to obese mice. And the story goes on to say that what they're finding is that even so you become obese, you get health problems that are associated with that, And the drugs that they give you may actually be harmful to you because the obesity changes your entire immune system. As I say, we have just lived through 2 years. 2 years where obesity could have been a death sentence to somebody. Had they been in normal weight range, health and weight range, they would have sailed through COVID. Instead, they're gone. We should not be encouraging this. We should not be glamorizing that. We should be loving the people that struggle with these things and giving them every available tool to change to a healthy state of their physical health. When I come back, I'm going to give you, there's a interesting thing, 5 rules of getting into shape. And it's not difficult. It's not about, this is not about pounding it out at the gym. It's just some simple things that you can do during the course of your day. I know you're too busy to make it to the gym. I have those days. I make it a priority, but I have those days as well. But there are other things that you can do to get in shape. We'll play that. And there's also a study about something you can do for 1 week that will significantly improve your well-being. And it's something I've talked about a lot. I see a lot of merit to this study. We'll get to both of those when we come back. Stick around. But not to fly my kite on. Do you want to flash a light on? Take a look, it's on display for you. Coming down, no, not today. Did you meet your fortune teller? Get it off. Over the years, I've done a lot of different things to detox. I do fasting. I've done cleanses. I've done different herbs that help detox. Those kinds of things. Just really kind of experimenting with all types of different things just to see how they make me feel. But there may be one really important detox that I don't think I need this as much as some people, but probably it'd be recommended for a vast majority of us. And this was an article that appeared on Study Finds. The headline of this story is, avoiding social media for just 1 week significantly boosts well-being and cuts depression. Doctors may soon be writing a very simple prescription to improve your mental health. Get off social media. A new study finds avoiding social media platforms for just 1 week significantly improved a person's well-being and also lowered levels of both anxiety and depression. A team from the University of Bath found that social media users can sometimes spend up to 9 hours on their favorite platforms in a single week. I'll be honest with you, I thought that sounded low to some of the people that I know that are on social media. This includes endlessly scrolling through Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok. Previous studies have found conflicting data when it comes to the benefits and harms of social media. While some reports have disputed claims that social media is addictive, especially for children, others have noted up to 50 harmful effects of constantly browsing these platforms. It is the admitted goal of social media companies to get you addicted to these things. The sounds, the bells, the rewards, the constant movement. They have talked about it. There are people with social media who said, I don't let my kids get on these things because we've designed them to be addictive. Their entire business model depends on you spending as much time on their platform as possible. That's their business. So I would imagine any studies that were done that show social media is not addictive, at least to large groups of people, were done by the social media companies themselves. So what they did was they took 154 people between the ages of 18 and 72 who used social media daily. They split them up and they got one group to cold turkey social media. Funny thing was, they found that even the people that were in that group still used it 21 minutes a week. They just couldn't get off of it completely. So there you go. There's a little wiggle room. In comparison to mental health scores gathered at the start of the study, results showed that avoiding social media for a full week led to dramatic improvements in each participant's well-being, regardless of age. The experiment group also displayed noticeable drops in anxiety and depression. The team is now hoping to expand this project to see how detoxing from social media for a longer period of time impacts long-term mental health scores. I'm telling you, as agitated as we are, so many people struggling with mental health, depression, all of these things. Social media. Look, I get so there's some positives to it. You meet long-lost people. Makes it real easy for people to have affairs with old boyfriends and girlfriends. That's been found out for sure. But it is not good for our mental health. So you might consider that. You know, it would be a test. You might just play with yourself a little bit and see. Pardon the expression there. and just see if you could give up social media for even a day. That need to know what everybody else is doing or how your latest post is faring. Does anybody like it? Did anybody comment? I got to know. I'm telling you right now, life without social media is fine. I live it. Now, I'm not saying I'm off it all the time. I get notifications from somebody on Facebook. I got a messenger today. I'll check it out. But the idea of constantly scrolling these things, it's not good for our health. If you're looking for ways to just start kind of getting back into shape, now, we're not talking about a radical transformation, but you want to start taking some baby steps into some level of movement. This is 5 simple rules for how to get in shape. I thought they were all pretty good.
For anyone out there trying to start getting in better shape, here are 5 simple rules that have helped me throughout the past 5 years. Activity. But wait, I don't mean more intense gym sessions or more long runs. No, the way we think of exercise is part of the problem here. We compartmentalize exercise as a separate thing we do for 1 hour a day, 3 times a week, or that jog that we take 4 times a week. But activity, or what I prefer to call movement, can happen any time of the day. It can be built into all corners of your life. It's going for a long walk, even though you hit the gym earlier that day. It's doing some stretches before breakfast. It's sitting in a squat to check your email. It's choosing to play on the monkey bars with your kids rather than just watching. It's staying away from spending all day in the chair. It's not intense gym sessions, but more low-intensity movement that can make all the difference. What you consume. Like anyone in decent shape on the internet, people ask me what my diet's like, or can you show a full day of eating? The problem with this is there's no special foods. There's no special diets. What you eat is very personal to you. Some basic rules I like to follow are, 1, eat food that would go bad if you left it out. 2, buy that food from the sides of the grocery store, not the middle. I'm not a fan of counting calories or doing specific diets. I think we intuitively know what's good for us, and we know how to nourish our body. Something that's helped me stay on track over the years is time-restricted eating. Intermittent fasting can be a powerful tool and can also be very convenient for focusing on other things than food. Give credit to your human capabilities. As humans, we have a diverse skill set. We can run for long distances, but we can also lift boulders. We should treat our bodies like the versatile athletes we are. Train to be strong and powerful. Build muscle with your body weight or weights. But other days, get your heart rate pumping, sweat, and challenge your cardiovascular system. Stretch, and even better than stretching, use the range of motion your body naturally has. Challenge your body's ability by learning a new skill or playing a game. Progress in coordination, balance, agility, adaptability. My physique changed a lot when I stopped thinking of my week as training days and off days. Instead, now every day is a chance for some form of movement, and it's usually much different than the day before. Sleep. All of the first 3 will be easier if you sleep well. Sleep sets the stage for you to be your best self. Prioritize your sleep and watch how much better you feel. Do it with love. At the risk of sounding a little bit hippie, you have to want to look good or be in good shape because it feels good for you and it says something about your character. Don't do it to punish yourself. Don't do it to be validated by others. Do it simply to become better. One thing I picked up many years ago is to train for a performance goal, not an aesthetic goal. Don't run to lose weight. Run to get a better mile time or longer distance. Don't lift to make your chest bigger. Lift to increase your bench press. Learn a new skill. Develop the handstand. Get the muscle up. Increase your vertical jump. Strive to get better at something, and as you progress, your body naturally follows shape. And above all, follow your interests. Don't do something because you think you should do it, or because someone said it's good. Do it because it piques your interest.
So there you go. I think that's great advice. Just start incorporating some movement into your day. You know, I think there are a whole lot of people could benefit just from that. And what happens, I've seen this happen. People start moving a little bit more. They start feeling better. It inspires them or gives them the energy to do something a little bit more. And it just starts growing on itself. This is something kind of amazing. We live in a time now, in the blink of an eye, we've gotten to a point where we literally could be sitting in a chair just about the entire day, sitting down. We've not had that luxury for thousands and thousands of years of being humans. It just really wasn't an option. And we've arrived at this time, and we see all the health consequences of lack of movement and how our bodies suffer for this. So I think it's just good advice. Start moving. Shop at the sides of the aisle. Don't worry about calorie counts or any of that ridiculousness. Just eat what you know is good. You'll find stuff that you love, and make sure that you're getting good sleep, too. That's the one I struggle with, I will admit, but I have plenty of energy during the day. When I come back, I want to talk about salt. This is another one of those things where we've been told, all of us, to avoid salt. Salt is like the sun. It's out to kill us. Have they overhyped this aversion to salt and getting us all on low salt diets? Is there a problem with that? We're going to take a look at that when we come back. Stay with us. All right, welcome back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, doing Hump Day Health like we do every Wednesday from 10 to 11 o'clock. My name is Mike, and I am a saltaholic. I'm going to go ahead and confess that out up front. For so long, we've been told that salt is really terrible for you. You need to reduce your sodium. A lot of people always talk about the high sodium content in junk foods. They're not wrong about that because that is heavily processed. Salt laden with a bunch of chemicals as well. Those things are not good. But bottom line is, we have been told for years and years that salt is really the enemy. If you eat a lot of salt, you're going to have high blood pressure. I think people that eat with me might talk about me behind my back because I salt a lot of food, and sometimes repeatedly. I might salt the top of something. If I'm eating down into something, I may salt the bottom side of it too. I do like salt. Always have. My blood pressure is typically in the 106 to 64 range. I think that's what it was last time I had my blood pressure taken. How could this be? The medical profession tells us that salt, just like the sun, is a killer. I think that they are wrong again, at least for a large percentage of people. So I did a little bit of research on this, running across a story from a natural health group that had put this out. So I'm going to read a little bit to this, so maybe you need to determine, is salt good or bad for you? And you may be different than a spouse or a child or a friend. The advice for most people to reduce salt is based on the notion that a reduction in salt decreases blood pressure and incidence of hypertension, which in turn leads to a reduction in mortality from cardiovascular disease. But there's reason to be skeptical of such broad claims. For one, the results of the largest trial to date looking at salt reduction and incidence of heart failure were released earlier this month. The trial found that reducing salt intake did not lead to fewer emergency room visits, hospitalizations, or deaths for patients with heart failure. The truth is that salt affects people differently. Some people can eat salt with no effect on their blood pressure. Other people are salt sensitive. And even a slight increase in sodium intake can increase blood pressure and harm the kidneys' ability to regulate fluid. This is why integrative practitioners often tell us to be wary of low-salt diets. And here's the problem. So with so many of these things, we've been told, we're sold 50 years of a low-fat diet. Go out and get your snack wells. They don't have any fat in them. They're filled with sugar that in your body will spike insulin levels and get your body to store fat, but there's no fat in the actual product, so it's low-fat. Make sure you get the skim milk. You don't want that fat, those animal fats. Trim the fat off your meat. Get a good lean piece of meat. Run away from fat. How has that worked out for us? I believe salt is very similar to that. Integrative practitioners often tell us to be wary of low-salt diets. Lowering salt intake may be appropriate for some salt-sensitive individuals to lower blood pressure. But for others with normal blood pressure, some evidence demonstrates that lowering salt intake is just as likely to increase blood pressure as to reduce it. And even if cutting salt reduces blood pressure, it may not be a good thing because it activates salt-retaining hormones, which can stiffen arteries. Animal studies have shown that low-salt diets can accelerate atherosclerosis. Tell you every time I'm not a scientist. Low-salt diets can also elevate insulin levels, meaning lowering salt may increase your risk of becoming overweight or obese. Insulin is a fat-storing hormone. Additionally, not all salt is created equal. Most of the salt people eat tends to come from ultra-processed junk foods that contain refined salt. These foods should be eaten sparingly, if at all. Refined salt has been chemically treated to improve the product's shelf life. Chemicals are added that contain anti-caking, free-flowing, or conditioning agents such as sodium ferrocyanide, ammonium citrate, and aluminum silicate. Unrefined salt, like sea salt, contains over 80 natural minerals and elements that have a myriad of health benefits. As I tell you, every time I do this show, I learn a little something. A lot of times that causes me to try a little something. This morning, I use pink Himalayan sea salt. I watched a Joe Rogan episode where they said that actually comes from some part of Pakistan, from an old, long-deceased inland sea that has evaporated. Anyway, saw recommendations to try sea salt in water in the morning, like a quarter of a teaspoon, just a small amount dissolved in some water, and you drink it early in the morning on an empty stomach where the minerals in this salt is taken up very quickly. It's supposed to energize cells and all kinds of things. So I tried it this morning. And I'll probably try it for several mornings and just see what, if any, effect there is on my energy levels, which are typically pretty good anyway. But there is a difference in the quality of salt you get. You can do some research on that. Now, if you get Himalayan sea salt, if you don't get regular iodized salt, you may need to get iodine in your diet from other places. They did add iodine to salt back, I think, in the 1920s, because apparently we had some of an epidemic of goiters here in the United States for iodine deficiency, so they added iodine to salt. We don't want to see a return to the day of the goiter, so make sure you're getting plenty of iodine, but I do use at home anyway Himalayan sea salt, and that's what I tried with my water this morning. On further research, as I was studying this stuff for this segment, I found out it's about 25% of the people are salt sensitive. So you may be the ones that need to be careful with salt. I looked to see exactly how you could determine this, and really, the only thing I could really come up with from looking at several different articles was essentially, if you can cut back on salt for a little while, and then add some salt, and then check your blood pressure before and after, and see if your blood pressure does spike when you have salt, you may be salt sensitive. But when I look at this study and this statistic that 25% of us are salt sensitive, I think for the other 75% of people, 3 out of every 4 people, avoiding salt could actually be hurting your health. In the Himalayan sea salt, many of those kinds of salts, there's very beneficial vitamins and minerals, or minerals in particular, in these salts that could be good for you. And I've just read the research showing that a low salt diet can actually cause things like obesity, hypertension, and stiffening of arteries. 75% of people may be following bad advice when it comes to salt. Again, this is on you to figure out your individual needs. You could be salt sensitive. Apparently, I am not. And I am a saltaholic. So to all of you people who judge me when you see me eat, let me tell you what I do that I think is particularly alarming to some people. And I know because this narrative of salt creates high blood pressure and heart attacks has been around for so long, I know people think I'm just about to fall over when I'm not doing keto and I'm just out enjoying myself and having I love a Corona and lime with chips and dip at a Mexican restaurant. You will sometimes see me because I don't want to salt a whole plate, you know, a whole basket of the chips that come with the restaurant, because other people are eating from that basket too, and I'm a considerate guy. So there are times, many times, that I will actually get a salt shaker next to me and I will salt basically every chip before I eat it. And I can feel people judging me. I can feel you. But you need to go with me to any physical Anytime I go to give blood or anything like that, I'm always complimented on my blood pressure. I am not salt sensitive. I'm a saltaholic. There may be something else I need to address that is making me crave salt the way I do, but it does not seem to have profound effects in a negative way on my health anyway. So take it for what it's worth. 75% of you may be actually needing to get a better, have more salt intake and make sure that you're getting a good quality salt along with it. More swing and a miss from the medical establishment. One size fits all health advice to run away from salt. Probably hurting people. Be right back. Citizens from all over the world. This is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling. All right, final segment for the day here on Hump Day Health, and I'm about to get to our buddy Dr. Eric Berg talking about something very simple and easy you might want to include in your diet on a daily basis, nutritional yeast. Just by its name, seems like an odd thing to talk about, but I always learn something, and this is an interesting one. Before I get to that, though, if you're not feeling well, if you're looking, if you got pains, joint pains you're worried about, if you're just not feeling well, if you want to find a way to treat the cause of your disease, not just the symptoms, I want to make sure everybody knows about Integrative Medical and Wellness Clinic in Ridgeland. They are on Draperton Drive right over there by Costco, and this is an integrative medicine practice, meaning they take a look at everything, and they try to get to the root cause of your problems. They also have advanced techniques when it comes to things like knee pain that a lot of people are suffering. If you're considering a surgery because you've got some pain somewhere and you've been advised to take surgery, you ought to stop in to Integrative Medical and Wellness and get a second opinion, see if they can help you do it without surgery. It'd be great to avoid that, wouldn't it? You can find them at imawc.com, imawc.com. That's Integrative Medical and Wellness Clinic. Again, they're in Ridgeland. And I think this is the future of medicine. You need to check them out. And I want to make sure, as I talk about food and things on this show, we've got a great new sponsor on with Stonington Farm. You can go to stoningtonfarm.com. They do bulk shipments of grass-fed, 100% grass-fed, no antibiotics, no hormones, Mississippi-raised cattle. This can be shipped, as I said, free to Mississippi to buy in bulk. You're going to get great-tasting and substantially healthier meat if you order from Stonington Farm. You can find them stoningtonfarm.com. This is healthy, great-tasting eating. You want to talk about adding something to your diet that you'll absolutely love that's going to benefit your health, this is a great place to start. Again, stoningtonfarm.com. Check them out. All right, before we run out of time, here's Dr. Berg on nutritional yeast.
Hey guys, Dr. Berg here. In this video, I want to talk about nutritional yeast. Now, you know, when you think about yeast, eating yeast, you probably think, oh wow, I don't want to get candida. I don't want a yeast infection. But that's not what nutritional yeast is. In fact, nutritional yeast is not brewer's yeast either to make beer or bread or whatever. Nutritional yeast is nutritional. It's very, very different, and you can consume it. It looks like this right here. And this is really amazing stuff because you want to, first of all, make sure you get the non-fortified version because a lot of times they'll add synthetic vitamins, which we don't want synthetic vitamins. We want non-fortified, okay? But check this out. Nutritional yeast has a complete amino acid profile. It's complete protein. It has all of the amino acids, and it's a vegan source. So, I mean, think about it. You can eat a steak, and you can get a protein, but this is a complete protein, which is very interesting. I don't know if you can eat tremendous amounts of it. It's kind of an interesting taste, but it gives you a lot of amino acids, which are building blocks for proteins and body tissue and hormones and neurotransmitters and a whole bunch of other things. Okay. Number two, it gives you nearly all of the B vitamins. And that's really cool because it's very difficult to get B vitamins in food, especially if you're not doing grains. Normally when you have an unrefined grain, you get B vitamins, but we don't want to consume grains because they turn into sugar. But this is a really good source of B vitamins. So B vitamin deficiencies, it creates stress, it creates the need for insulin to go up, a lack of carbohydrate metabolism, a lack of detoxification from your liver, nerve pain, I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Nightmares. So this really gives you the B vitamins, especially if you have this stress buildup. You just have a teaspoon a day, okay? So it gives you the B vitamins. It also has amazing minerals. Yeah, minerals like zinc, phosphorus. I mean, think about phosphorus. Phosphorus is the accelerator of the nervous system. So if you're tired, phosphorus will actually give you energy. Selenium for the immune system. Molybdenum, which I can't even pronounce that. But that is a mineral, a trace mineral, that allows the liver to detoxify chemicals. So this stuff is amazing. So what I recommend is do a tablespoon or a teaspoon a day. I give it to my dog. My dog loves it. Now the question is, how do you consume it, right? There's these little flakes. You take a teaspoon and you just eat it, okay? It gets in your teeth a little bit, but you wash it down. You could mix it with peanut butter or other things, but I just eat it directly, okay? So go ahead and try this. I recommend you take one teaspoon, but make sure you get the non-fortified version, all right?
So there you go. I have not ever used that. This is something I will be adding very soon. I've heard it's kind of cheesy, almost like Parmesan cheese. People will sprinkle it on popcorn or on spaghetti, things like that. But it's nutritional yeast, and as he says, get the non-fortified kind. All kinds of great health benefits to that. So it's just an interesting thing. I'm always looking for something kind of easy to put in. You know, the great thing about health stuff is that even if you're maybe not deficient in these minerals, it's not going to hurt you. That's not something that's going to hurt you. The benefits are all on the upside. If you don't need it because you're getting your minerals from somewhere else, you're getting your B vitamins from somewhere else, you just end up with some extra ones, but at least you're taking extra steps to reclaim your health. So nutritional yeast, it's something I will be adding soon, and I'll report on it. That's about all the time I've got today. Look, now is the time. Today's the day. If it's not today, it's tomorrow. If you don't do it this week, do it next week. It's time for everybody to reclaim their health. That's all the time I got. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't.